Well, first of all, my name is Becky, and I was just saying to the ministry team and the worship team earlier on, I feel like I'm kind of the newbie in some ways because I've actually been away for 2 years. So a lot of the faces that have been here and been settled in for 2 years, I don't know them. So please come and introduce yourselves, even if you've been here for 2 years, because I just am dying to meet everyone again. I have grown up in this church in sense of like my Christian walk. I have actually, I got saved in university in my second year, had no background of Christianity before that, apart from CV school where they used to make you sit, you know, with your hands together and your eyes closed and do your prayer. I did know the Lord's Prayer, so that was a start. And when I first became a Christian, I actually thought that you needed to kneel beside your bed with your hands folded and your eyes closed in order for God to hear you. Like, so I did go through a little phase of that in the first few weeks, and then I realized that probably was slightly bigger than my need to kneel on the floor. So that was kind of my initial start with the Lord. I got saved through a cassette tape preaching on how to evangelize to your friends. So a bit bizarre, not your usual story, although actually it was kind of more of a culmination of events, but that was the moment I gave my life to the Lord, and that was pretty much exactly 4 years ago now, so time flies and you're having fun. No, 5 years ago, oh my gosh, time flies even more. And in the last few years, after doing the gap year at Woody with Chris, I went off to America to a ministry school. In the Bible Belt, which is kind of scary when you go because they don't actually tell you that much about the school. And so I wasn't sure if I was going to like the extremist, let's protest in the street against everything, next kind of school as you hear about in the Bible Belt, or if it was actually just going to be like it was, just an incredible, incredible faith-building experience with the Lord that just radically changed my life. And I would recommend running off to America for 2 years to any of you. And if you want to know more about it, please come and ask me because it's an amazing, amazing opportunity. So I'm back and I'm here. And that's my kind of brief story, really. One of the first things I want to do is just encourage each and every one of you. Tonight, you're not here by accident. You're not in this room just because you happen to come along. I really believe that the Lord has brought you here tonight because he's getting ready to do something in each of your hearts. He's getting ready to take you to a new level with him. He's getting ready to pour out something inside of you that is going to be this seed that germinates and grows and just expands and just like it says in the New Testament about the mustard seed that grows into a tree that is abundant and has birds living in it and provides shade for others. I really believe that the Lord is getting ready to do that this year, and that this is an incredibly exciting year to be a Christian in Cardiff. It's something that I'm really thrilled to be back, and I'm really thrilled to be with all of you and to be working alongside students again, because I had to go to America to be a student again because I just love it so much. So I just think it's such an amazing time to really get filled with the Lord and really impact people around you. And you know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the Christians in university, my housemates, who showed me who the Lord is, and showed me just that amazing love and joy. And you know, I just thought Christians were fusty old people who sat in pews. You know, that was honestly my experience of Christians. I never knew there were people, young people, that actually liked going to church, and not just on Sundays. You know, Wednesdays and Thursdays and Mondays, some nights too, I think. You know, it was kind of an all-week activity, and they actually had Christian friends. You know, it was amazing to me. So tonight I'm speaking on the culture of faith. And it's kind of been something that has been really instilled in me in Morningstar. It's kind of more than just faith. It's more than just receiving the Lord and saying, from now on, God, it's your way and not my way. And it's more than just saying, I know I'm going to heaven at the end of it. And I know that each of you are here tonight because you know that, because you know that there's more out there than just, I'm saved and I'm off to heaven when I die. It's about living a life that is so filled with excitement and so filled with just this passion for the Lord that just cannot die, no matter what the circumstances around you. And it's about coming into that understanding of what that means. And not through your own effort, not through like, I'm going to do this and I'm, this is, you know, I'm going to go for it because, you know, there's nothing within me that wants to do this, but I'm going to go for it. It's about falling in love with the Lord and allowing him to do that in you, allowing him to really put that desire to follow him inside of you. So that's kind of the basis of the culture of faith. The main passage I'm going to talk on is John 6. So if you do have your Bibles and you want to turn there, do so now. I've got my lovely pink and green Bible, so I won't lose it. I'm starting from 22, and I'm going to kind of talk on various passages all the way to 69. So I'm not going to read that, because otherwise we would be here past my bedtime. So let's cut that out. It starts off basically with Jesus has just talked to the 5,000 that he fed the day before. And they've come up to him and they kind of want to be fed again, basically. They're like, look, you know, we're hungry again. You know, that only lasted a day. Can you kind of feed us again? And Jesus is just kind of exposing that to them. And he says, you know, I tell you the truth, you want to be with me because I fed you, not because you understood the miraculous signs. And it was really, when I read this passage and when I heard Bill Johnson speak on it as well on the CD that I was Chris gave me a couple of weeks ago, it really struck me about what this passage is actually about, because Jesus is really, really offensive in this passage. And quite frankly, some of the things he says kind of disgust me a little bit. And like, as being a Christian now, I know that he's talking metaphorically, but when you were there sat in the day, I can imagine they're just being like, there's no way that I'm following you if I have to do these things. And he basically starts off with talking about the how he is the living bread. Like, I am the living bread. I am the bread from heaven. And that's kind of offensive enough to them in the day. You know, they're all sat there. It says they're grumbling and they're complaining. And then he says to them, I love this. He says, this is the NLT version, by the way, so it might be slightly different in another one, but in the NLT version it says, verse 43, but Jesus replies, because, you know, that's kind of saying, well, how can you say this? How can you say I'm the bread that came down from heaven? And he said, Jesus replied, stop complaining about what I said. That's great. Who, you know, you got your preacher stood up there like, all right, guys, I know you're grumbling, stop complaining. And everyone's kind of like, oh, gosh, he heard, you know, like, oops, like, perhaps we should have kept it a bit quieter. And then he starts to say, yes, I'm the bread of life. And he talks about the ancestors in the desert, you know, ate the manna. Yes, that happened. But then he says, anyone who eats this bread will live forever. And this bread, which I will offer so the world may live, is my flesh. And I sat there thinking, is he promoting cannibalism? You know, like, what is this? What is this? This is awful. I'm just not sure I'm up for this anymore. You know, first he lulls us in with feeding us and, you know, multiplying the bread and the fish, and now he's asking us to eat his flesh. I just don't think I'm up for this. And he doesn't stop there. He goes even further, and he says, I tell you the truth, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you cannot have eternal life within you. And then even, like, you see it verse 60, it says many of his disciples, those who, you know, not the 12, but the extended crew that had been following him around, many of his disciples said, this is very hard to understand. How can anyone accept it? So even the people that were known as his followers, even those people who had said, you know, we're gonna follow you, we're not just here for the feeding, we're actually kind of on board with where you're going, even those people have said, you know, this is way beyond us. Like, how can anyone actually accept this? How can anyone follow this teaching? Because this is too much. And I was looking at it, and I was like, Jesus is really quite clever, because what he does is he offends people's minds, and he offends them so that he can reveal the heart behind it. And he tells them later on as well, he tells the disciples later on, what will you think if you see the Son of Man ascend to heaven again? The Spirit alone gives eternal life. Human effort accomplishes nothing. And the very words I have spoken to you are Spirit and life. And so he tells them straight out, look, guys, you can't understand this through your minds. You can't understand where I'm going. You can't understand my teaching. You can't understand drinking my blood and eating my flesh through your minds. You have to understand it through the Spirit that's living within you. And so I think that's something for me that really, really comes out with the culture of faith, is that there are some times where you literally cannot understand it with your mind. There is no formula, and that is definitely my experience over the last 2 years of just going out there and being with the Lord. There is absolutely no formula to what the Lord does and how he uses people. I've seen everything from people getting spat in the eye, from people getting punched in the stomach, from like people being given a word that sends them into a funny little spasm on the floor because they're getting delivered of a demon. I've seen knees getting healed by people laying a hand on them. I've seen people getting healed and getting delivered through crazy, crazily different means. And it's never the same. It's never the same thing twice. And as soon as I've tried to revert back to understanding faith in my mind, I've got into trouble and things haven't happened. And it's been the same thing again and again that I've seen, that the Lord is saying to me, Becky, come back to me. Come back to your understanding of your faith in me. So that was kind of where we were going on that one. They're not able to understand it through their minds. The other thing is with this one as well is that they ask him, we want to do miracles of God. What do we do to do miracles of God? And Jesus said, you can't do anything. You can only believe. And that's my paraphrase, by the way. And that is something that I think is another just really important thing to know about the culture of faith, is that there is nothing that you can do. There's nothing that you can achieve. There's no special credits that get you to that level of being able to heal people or being able to walk out to the street and give someone a word that just slams them, you know, and they like walk away wobbling because they, you know, their legs don't work anymore because you've so awed them with the love of God. And there is nothing that you in yourself have achieved that would make him use you any less or make him use you any more. He uses you because he loves you and because he put that inside of you and because he created you to be used by him. And it's not something that you have to achieve or you have to work up to or you have to be a Christian for so long to be able to do. I was fortunate enough to find my way here not long after I became a Christian, and I got into prophesying almost immediately. And some people I know would preach that, you know, you have to go through certain avenues before you can prophesy, before you can give words from God. And I don't think that's true. I think that I've seen people become Christians and pray for people to get healed, and they get healed. Actually, I'll tell you that story. We were in Haiti in May. And we were doing some humanitarian aid work. It was devastating. I've been radically changed by that culture. It was crazy. They are just amazing, amazing people. And we were up on a mountainside in the middle of nowhere, and just absolutely beautiful. And we came across this one guy, and he had a withered arm, and it was all kind of crooked up like this, and he was all short and everything, and it just looked awful. And we said to him, you know, kind of wandering on the mountain, a bit like Jesus, like, right, let's find our next victim. And so we were like wandering along, and we come across this guy, and we're like, he's got a withered arm, let's pray for him, go! So we're all like mobbing this poor guy, who's quite out for being prayed for, actually. And we find out that it was broken when he was really little, and so he can't move, like he couldn't move it, and it didn't, because in Haiti, you know, there's no medical facilities out there, there's no one looking after them, so no one knows how to set a bone, they just kind of let it do whatever it needs to do, basically. And so he's grown up with this crippled arm. And so we start praying for him, and we're praying, and we're kind of, you know, proclaiming, and we're claiming what's going on, and we're saying, you know, that Jesus, this is, you know, this is your arm, heal it, kingdom come. The arm doesn't get healed. But we come to find out that this guy is not a Christian, and we say to him, well, do you want to become a Christian? He's like, yeah, really, I do. I really want to become a Christian, which shocked me because, you know, you'd think that he'd need to get healed before he saw the power of God, but apparently he wanted it anyway, so that was cool. So we prayed for him to become a Christian. And as we're praying for him to become a Christian, we're all kind of stood around him. This lady, like, pummels her way through the crowd. She goes into the middle of the crowd. She kneels on the floor with her back to him, and she says, she puts her hands in the air. I have no idea where this lady comes from to this day. I'd never seen her before. Like, she wasn't on the mountain before we started praying. And she puts her hands in the air, and she says, in Creole, she says, I want to be healed. I'm sick. I want to be healed. And so we kind of get our translator to ask her, you know, what's going on? And it turns out she has tumors. She doesn't know they're tumors, but we can feel them in her stomach, these lumps in her stomach, and most possibly cancerous tumors, what were you thinking they were? And so we say to this guy, right, you've just become a Christian, you pray for her. So this poor guy, he's been a Christian literally 10 seconds by this point. So he starts praying for her, and my one friend has her hand on her stomach to feel these tumors. And she says, as this guy starts praying for her, the tumors start shaking and moving in her stomach. Like, she can feel them doing this, like vibrating in her stomach. And then we tell this guy, you know, keep going, the prayer's, you know, you're doing good, the prayer's working. This guy has no previous knowledge of prayer, of healing, of God, of anything. He's just going on what we're telling him. And he's praying. Goodness knows what he's praying. He's praying in Creole, praying anything. So whatever it is, it's really good. He's praying, and then this lady, eventually, the tumours just disappear. My friend literally feels her stomach go from here and flatten like that so that she doesn't have any tumours. And as soon as she feels that, this lady jumps up and she says, "I've got no pain, I'm healed, the pain is gone." And she's just like running because she's so happy. And this guy had been a Christian, like I said, 10 seconds, and had just healed this lady of possibly cancerous tumours. And I mean, on the scale of 1 to 10, you know, of healings, that's not a snotty nose, you know, that's pretty much up there in the cancerous category, you know. And so it's just incredible to me that the Lord is, he has no favourites, he has no, well, I'm his favourite, but you know, he has no other favourites. He has no comparisons with anybody. He'll just use anybody because he's so delighted that somebody will step out and will say, I'm terrified. Every time I go to heal somebody, I'm terrified. But okay, God, like, use me, okay, because I really, really want to see you set this person free of whatever they're struggling with, whether it's physical, emotional, spiritual, whatever that is. We shouldn't be struggling with it because we're Christians and we're children of God. And so that was just one of those things that was just amazing. This guy, bit of a tangent, but yeah, anyway, he was just amazing. And then he told us, it was really sad actually, he told us that he couldn't go to the church that we were coming from because he had holes in his trousers, and they really believe in Sunday best out there. And so we couldn't actually get him connected into the church until we got him a pair of trousers, which we did, so it was good. He could go to church after that. But that's something we're still working on over there. So they've definitely got that kind of doesn't have a formula thing. And really, I just want to give you, I just want to kind of slam you with stories, basically, if that's all right. Just like stories of stuff that I've seen and what I think that means with the Lord. The first thing I want to say about the culture of, well, second thing, because I already said about doesn't have a formula. The second thing is that you need, like, really honestly, it's just about getting to know God. Like, the culture of faith is all about standing on who God is, not on who you are, but who he is in you. And as soon as you start looking at yourself, the enemy will start telling you stuff like, you can't do that. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't work through you. He works through them. He doesn't work through you. Do you remember that last time when you prayed for that knee to be healed and it didn't get healed? Do you remember this morning when you hit the snooze button instead of praying for 10 minutes? He'll try to tell you all those things that disqualify you, and they don't. Because, and he knows it. He knows they don't, but he'll still tell you it because he's so scared of you gaining power and of you going out and doing things that he will try to tell you anything to stop you doing it, because it's his kingdom of darkness that you're taking over with the kingdom of God. And he knows that the only power he has is to put you off, because you're carrying something so powerful inside of you that he cannot let that get out and destroy the kingdom of darkness that he's trying to establish on the earth. So really, you need to get to, like, we all need to get to know God. That's the key to it, is just getting to know him. And there's a few things that I do to do that. One of the first things is I ask him for small things. Like, I pray for the most ridiculous stuff. Like, I was running one day when I was in America, and I was listening, like, we were just kind of running, me and a friend, and we were, you know, out of breath, so we weren't talking, so it's pretty quiet. And we were, in the trees were woodpeckers, and I've never seen a woodpecker, like, on TV, but never in real life. And I was like, oh, God, it'd kind of be cool to see a woodpecker. And just kind of carried on running, not, you know, just kind of conversing with the Lord and chatting with him. And then a few days later, I stood in my room, and what should fly up to the tree right in front of my room, I was just looking out of the window, was this woodpecker just came flying up right in front of me and started pecking at the wood. I was like, wow, there's a woodpecker. And I remembered that the Lord had, like, I'd asked him for that. And then another woodpecker flew up. And then another woodpecker flew up. And it was like a whole flock of woodpeckers. Like, it was ridiculous. I was like, okay, God, I get it. Like, you know, this cool, thanks. You know, it was just awesome. Like, he didn't just show me one. He showed me, like, all of them. I don't know where they all came from, but they were all suddenly in front of my window. It was really weird. And I asked him to see one of those red and white mushrooms as well. You know, the fairy tale ones that the frogs sit on. Like, I've always wanted to see one of those in real life. And, like, no kidding, I prayed for this. And, like, a week later, I was just kind of in the woods with, I was childminding, so I was with some kids, and I just saw this mushroom, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's one of those mushrooms. All right. I just don't know why he does it. It's so random. But I love it. It's awesome. He gets a kick out of it, obviously. And then I ask him for big things as well. Like, I persist in stuff. I've asked Kate if I can share this story, so she's all right with it. That's Katie over there. Most of you probably know her. Me and her have been very close friends, probably since my second year of uni when we moved in together. And she's like a sister to me. She's like so close to my heart, and I just love her to bits. And one day, because I was in America, obviously being far away from her, that there's the closeness you have is not, you don't speak to each other as often because it's through Skype and not through, you know, just seeing each other around or texting or whatever. And so she became really ill it was a while ago now. She's better now. Her appendix burst, and she lived for 3 days with the burst appendix, which, to be fair, medical standards, they would tell you that that probably shouldn't happen. You know, like, a burst appendix is really serious, and poison is, like, literally seeping into your body. Like, it's not a good thing. And so even just those 3 days, like Kate will tell you, like she can tell you more of the story, it's just completely miraculous. I didn't find out about this until she'd gone into hospital and Chris Facebooked me and said, you know, Kate's in hospital, she's having an operation, she's all right, but they're kind of having to do a lot of work on her, and, you know, just, I didn't know if you knew, wanted you to know. So I was in my little room, and I was on Facebook, and I saw this, and I was like, what? What? Like, I'm over here, and she's over there, and I'm not with her, and she's ill, and I can't sit in that little chair next to her bed and look at her all night. You know, what? This is not okay, you know? And I was just mad. I was so mad. Like, I was upset, too, and shocked, obviously, because I didn't expect to have a message saying Kate's in hospital, you know? But I just got up from my room, and I went outside, and I just started to pray. I just literally, I was just walking up and down like this, just like, right, God, this is it. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to pray, and you're going to show her that I'm praying, because I can't be there with her. And so you're going to show her that I'm praying for her, she's going to know. She's going to know somehow that I'm praying for her. And so I was literally wandering up and down like this. People who saw me must have thought I was insane. And I was just giving it to God. Like, I was just telling him how it was, and I was just being so raw with him. I was just like, this, I'm upset, I'm angry that I'm not there. I need you to show her that I'm praying for her. I need you to show her that I love her. And like, just declaring like healing over her. Like, I was literally just standing there for like 15-20 minutes, just consistently saying, I declare healing over Kate's body. I declare healing over Kate's body. Like, you know, this is not going to go any further. This is it now. This has stopped. You know, there's nothing more coming. And so I go back inside, and I write her a little Facebook message to say, you know, I'm thinking of you, wish I could be sat in that little chair next to you staring at me, you know, kind of doing all of that, and just saying, you know, get better soon, let me know when you're out, all that kind of stuff. And she emails me probably like 3 or 4 days later, once she's a bit better, maybe slightly longer than that, but it was a few days later anyway. And she says, oh, Becky, you know, thank you for praying for me, that's really cool. I haven't told her anything I'm praying for her, I've just kind of said, you know, I'm praying for you, I love you, kind of thing. And she faces me and she says, I had a really weird dream the other night. She said, I dreamt that you were standing over my bed with your hands like stretched out to me, proclaiming healing over my body. And I was like, no way. Because I actually told God to do that because I was so mad. And it was such an amazing, amazing moment, because not only had the Lord like strengthened my faith through doing that, he'd strengthened Kate's faith, he strengthened our friendship, because we knew that he cared about our friendship and he cared about each of us. And it was just amazing. Like, it just was another thing to add on to the list of good things that God had already done. And it was just literally because, like, well, one of the things I think was the love that, like, you know, you have for a close friend just spurs you on to, like, persistence in prayer like no other, you know? Like, that person is not going to, there's nothing bad is going to happen to them because they're your friend. And it's just this love, this fire within you that just draws out that persistence and that passion and that, and just God is like, he's okay, I've got it, I'm on it, you know, I'm over there, she's got a dream, cool, done, you know? It's like, he just loves it, when we get persistent like that. And so that's definitely one of those things that I think, you know, if you ask him for stuff, my gosh, he's going to give it to you in crazy ways, like a mushroom, you know, just random. There's another thing that I do as well, is I listen to him. I don't know how familiar all of you are with the prophetic. I'm guessing if you've been coming here a little while, you're probably quite used to it by now. Random people getting up the front and saying stuff from God. I love it. It's like breath to me. You know, it's like life. It's something that I couldn't be a Christian and if God didn't speak to me, it would just be boring. Like I just don't know. Like I just don't. I honestly am baffled by people who don't and like who just completely deny it. It's just such an amazing life-giving thing, and it's just one of those things that I really have been trained in. Like Helen and Chris are both amazing at ministry training, and we don't have dates yet, but there will be some more ministry training coming in the near future. So look out for that one, because if you've got any questions or worries or things that have bad things that have happened through prophetic stuff, you know, like bring them to that and be prepared to like, you know, just have your mind blown away by Helen's stories and Chris's stories of just stuff that's happened, because they've got some really cool stuff that the Lord's done through them as well. And I just listen to him and sorry to God, and I just like he just helps me to figure stuff out. Like that thing we were talking about with a formula, you know, if you're listening for him and you're not focusing on, right, I've got to lay my hand here and I've got to make sure I cover the area that they're in pain, right, good, and I've got to pray the exact right prayer, so, okay, so it's, dear Jesus, please heal this person, please, you know, like if you're not doing that, then because you're focused on Jesus, like you all of your attention is on him, it's not on what you're doing and your effort and what you can accomplish, and so then it's all about him. It's all about him doing it, and him being the author and perfecter of your faith. And so when we again the year before I went to Haiti, I went to Mongolia, and we were in a marketplace, and we were praying for this lady who was one of the owners of the stores. And again in Mongolia, you know, really poor, they don't have a lot of care, medical care. So she'd broken her ankle a few years ago, and it was still in a lot of pain and really swollen. And we could see like where the bones hadn't really formed back in properly. And we were praying for her, and I was doing that thing where I was like, okay, get my hand in the right place. Please, God, please, please, please. You know, like doing that whole thing and knowing that this, you know, it's a silly. And we'd had a talk the day before about listening and asking God. And so I sat there and I said, okay, God, like, I'm sorry, like, you know, this is not working. This lady is just kind of looking bored, frankly. And I would like you to tell me, like, what you're doing right now. Like, give me a picture or speak to me somehow. Show me what you're doing for this lady. Like, how are you praying for her? And he showed me very clearly a picture of him stroking her ankle. Like, it was like he literally taken his hands and he was just stroking down the outside of her ankle where her bone was. And so I said to the translator I was with, I said, ask the lady what she feels in her body right now, like what she feels on her ankle. And the translator asked her, and as she asked her that, this lady like looked at her ankle and she went, oh, I can feel something stroking down my ankle like this. And she kind of did this motion with her hands, and I was like, asked the translator what was going on, and she told me exactly what I'd just seen. And it was like the Lord was saying to me, see, when you ask, you'll see, you know, like he was like, just got to ask. And it was just like, it was really cool, because it was one of those moments where you suddenly realize that he's actually doing it and that you're just kind of in there getting the pleasure of partaking in it. Like he needs you to be there, because you're his instruments, you're the people that he's going to move through, that he's the power, and you don't have to stress about it at all. You don't have to go up to them and be like, oh gosh, I've got to heal this person. It's like, okay, Lord, it's like, where are you, what are you doing, like let's do this, like come on, like I'm up for it, let's go for it. And that was something really cool. And then the last thing that I like to do is just to go out and do it. Like, we just used to go out when we were at ministry school. We would go out and we would go to the local bus station and we would harass people, you know, and we would get them saved through harassing them, probably. But it was like we would just heal them and we would speak to them and we would give them words and we would just blow them up with, like, the Lord's love. And I was always terrified to do it. Like, before I went up to anyone, I'm always really scared to go up to them. But I know that God has got, like, so much good planned in there, that he's going to do something. And the more I do it, the less terrified I become, because I know the good stuff that's gone before it, and I know that he's going to meet me in every single way in doing that. And we went to Chicago while I was there, and Chicago, the campuses, the universities in Chicago are known to be like anti-religion, very atheist up there, just completely very northern, like, what are you doing, get out of my face, you know, kind of attitude. And they just don't deal with God at all. They just don't like to talk about it. So what did we do? We went and set up a booth in the middle of the campus, saying dream interpretations and spiritual readings, come along and, you know, we'll do this for you. So we were plonked right in the middle of the Chicago campus, and we're just completely, like, we're just sat there making loads of noise, dancing. There's about 30 of us, there's quite a crowd, and we're all kind of student age, so we look like we kind of belong there. The British accent kind of gave it away when I started talking, but, you know, everything else was fine. And we just kind of sat there and just waited for people to come up to us. Like, we didn't hassle people, we didn't go up to them, and, you know, sometimes there's time to go up to people and engage them, and sometimes there's time to just kind of sit back and let them come to you. And so we decided to do that. We decided to sit back and let them come to us. And this one girl came up to us, and I remember she was like, so what is this thing? What are you guys doing? And we just were like, well, you know, we're just kind of wanting to encourage you today, you know, like, have you got any dreams? Do you want us to, like, encourage you? She's like, and so she told us this dream, and I don't even remember what the dream was now. It wasn't particularly inspiring. Like, it was just kind of one of your standard dreams. And it was a good dream, but, you know, nothing like world-changing. And she gave us this dream, and we told her, we kind of said to her, you know, this is what we think it means and stuff. And then suddenly God said to me, Tala, she likes children. And I was like, okay. So I said, okay, this may sound really weird, but I really think you love children. And as I was speaking, he started giving me more, and I was like, and I think that you are, you really want to go into, like, working with children afterwards. And honestly, that's a word I've given lots before. Like, I do quite often get for people, like, one of the ways God speaks to me about what they want to do in future life and what they want to, you know, what their passions and their desires are and things, and to encourage them in that. And so I've given it quite a few times before. So to me, it wasn't that astoundingly, astonishingly amazing of a word, you know, like, especially because she was a girl, you know, girls do quite like children, not all of them, but, you know, a lot of girls do. And she said, so she was sat there, and she just looked at me, and her mouth just dropped open, and she's like, how do you know that? And I was like, well, again, may sound weird, but God told me. And she was like, really? And I said, yeah. She said, I used to go to church, and God never used to speak to me. And I was like, well, he probably was. It probably was just that you hadn't been taught how to, like, tune into him. You know, you hadn't kind of had your aerial focus towards him. And she was like, oh, my gosh, I just can't believe this. I can't believe that God speaks to you. Like, what else is he saying to you? And so she's, like, sat there, and I'm telling her all this stuff that, like, God's speaking to me about her. And like, so is the girl that sat next to me. And by the end of it, she's basically rededicated her life to the Lord. And I've given her a Bible, and I've, like, put, like, kind of markings on there of where she should go and what she should look at and stuff. And we're getting really excited about reading the Bible, as you do when you're a Christian, you know, just so nerdy. Like, oh, you should read this passage. It's really cool. God will change your life. And it's just, like, it was just really awesome. Like, she just totally got on fire again for the Lord. Like, she just was like, she, before then, she came in, she was just doing her daily life, she had no, you know, she'd walked away from the church, she wasn't in church, hadn't been for ages, just completely just like, well, you know, there's nothing in church for me. And she'd gone away just feeling like, I really want to get back into church. And we engaged her with, like, the campus ministry we were with and stuff, so that she had somewhere to go afterwards, so it wasn't just like a one-off hit, you know. And she was just, it was amazing. Like, it was just the life in her eyes by the end of it. She was literally transformed. You could see the difference in her. And we got to pray for her and just encourage her, you know, to go into, I think she wanted to go into some kind of child psychology studies afterwards. That was what she wanted to do. And it just completely affirmed that for her, that she was making the right decision. And I could just go on and on. There's so many stories as I think of them. And it's just amazing. And for me, it's really been about realizing who God is inside of me. About, I know I keep banging on about that, but really it is. It's not every time I am tempted to look at myself, every time I'm tempted to think I can't do this or I'm not good enough for this, I just say, you know what, I'm not, but I have Jesus inside of me, and he makes me so worthy to do these things because he's living there, and he chooses to use me, and he chooses to love me. And so every day I just take, like, even if I don't necessarily go out and speak to someone in that day and give a word, or I don't, you know, heal somebody in that day or whatever, that's not an everyday occurrence for me. I wish it was, but it's not right now. there's other things you can do to take steps towards him, like just start randomly asking him for stuff, you know, and see what he does. Like, I've honestly asked him to give me a clip back that I've lost because I really like that hair clip, you know, like I've, and he's done it. And it's like, I found it at the bottom of my drive, you know, just stuff like that. And it's just like, he will do stuff for you. Like, if you ask him for stuff, he'll do it. And, you know, just take those little steps, just do like something every day, just kind of make a commitment to yourself almost to say, like, that I'm going to go after God, because I know, especially for those of you that were at Jesus Culture on Thursday night, like, they were going on about the revival fire inside each of us, and honestly, it starts with those small steps, like, what's his name, the Guash guy, what's his name, Chris?
Evan Roberts.
He didn't start with a huge river. Like, he wasn't, one day he was just wandering around not really talking to God, and then the next day he suddenly found himself in a revival. You know, he was praying every day. He was asking God, he was seeking him, he was committing himself to God, and he was doing that because of a love that God had placed inside of him. He wasn't doing it through his own strength, just through his own desire. God put that desire inside of him. And so, like Chris said, even if you're feeling dry, even if you're feeling like, oh, I just can't even be bothered, you know? Like, I can't even be bothered to get up and pray in the morning. Like, it's okay if you can't be bothered to get up and pray in the morning. Pray in the evening, you know? Like, there's no pressure to do it in a particular way. There's no pressure to read your Bible for 2 hours. There's no pressure to pray for three, you know? If all you can manage in a day is 5 minutes of, God, I love you and I'm worn out, please refill me, that's fine, he will, and you'll increase. As you increase in love for him, as he puts more love for you in your heart, you'll want to do those things. It'll overflow out of you. It won't be hard. It won't be a chore. It'll be this delight, this joy of just bubbling out of you that you just want to do it, and you want to go and spill that out onto other people because there's so much of God inside of you. So if there's anything I can leave you with today, it's that don't feel pressure to be a culture of faith, to do the culture of faith. Feel free to go away and enjoy God and let him enjoy you. And then every day then, as he enjoys you, you'll just continue to grow in love for him.